In the name of God, who creates us, redeems us, and sustains us. Amen. I often like to say that seminary made me gay. There's a reason why I say that, though. Up until that point in my life, and this is going to sound a little strange, but it is the story of my life and who I am. I identified as not gay. The reason I identified as not gay is because even coming from a fairly progressive family, all the media images I had of gay people didn't resonate with who I was. And not that there was anything wrong with that, but I could not relate to that. So in my head, I had worked out my logic that even though I was attracted to men, I was not gay. It sounds almost absurd to come out of my lips, but that is what I had told myself over and over and over again. And then I went to my first year at seminary. And I met people who were in long-term relationships, who had a deep sense of faith, and who were more like me. Let me tell you, it really stinks sometimes when stereotypes aren't true. I began to see myself differently, and I had the realization of, oh, crap, I'm gay. Now, whether you're gay or you're straight, or wherever you are, I think all of us can have some points in our lives where we had stereotypes that were broken down. You see, we are given, and this is not unique to our time, we are given narratives. Narratives that are spun and help us put people into categories and certain ways and kind of make sense of the world. You know, those people are this way. Sometimes we internalize those narratives and those narratives become what we think of ourselves. Other times, though, other times when we encounter people that are different from us in whatever way, we have a certain narrative. Sometimes that narrative is repeated over and over and over again, that it becomes like the air we breathe or like the water that fish are in. We don't even recognize it. In the time of Jesus, there was a similar narrative. The narrative was between Samaritans and Jews, between men and women. The narrative was long. It was deeply rooted in the fabric of society. Those people are those ways. It was probably even deeper than we are now between Democrat and Republican, between liberal and conservative, or whatever labels we want to put on ourselves. And here Jesus, who spent a lot of time in Samaria hanging out with the enemy. You see, what you may or may not know, that the rift between Jews and Samaritans go back a while. You see, the Samaritans decided to intermarry. They were from a different tribe. And yet, when they came back to Judaism after spending some time chasing false idols, they had intermarried with people that were not purely Jewish. They had worshipped in a different place. They had undermined Jewish authorities from time to time. So the Hebrew people and the Samaritans people had a rich history. And while they shared the ancestor Jacob, you see, that was a distant memory, because many narratives have kind of spun up to separate people. So here you have Jesus. Jesus, and we hear this very long story, but it begins with Jesus at a well. A hot desert day and a long journey, sitting at a well, and a woman comes up. Probably wasn't anyone else there, you see, because what person would go at one of the hottest points of the day out in the middle of the desert to draw water? Perhaps a woman who didn't want to interact with other people. A woman that felt that she wasn't necessarily a part of society. A woman who had a story. You see, even within her group, I suspect Samaritans had woven a certain narrative of who she was. And then she encounters Jesus. And Jesus chooses another narrative. The narrative of who she truly is. And the woman also chooses not to live in to that narrative. How do they get there? Well, it starts with them meeting at this place and going back to the history of Jacob, their common ancestor, and not the history that it took to get to the point of division. And Jesus does something radical. Jesus is just sitting there at a well with nothing to draw water from. And he asked the woman if he could have a drink. Now this means that he has to drink from the same vessel that she is going to drink from. This is equivalent to segregation times and a white person drinking out of the colored person's water fountain. Perhaps that big of a taboo. So, of course, the woman is taken back, because Jesus is choosing to break the narratives, the social norms that had been constructed. And they engage in something deeper. They engage in a conversation. Jesus gets to know her. And you'll notice that this is one of the few times where Jesus starts the conversation with somebody in the Gospels. Usually it's somebody coming up to Jesus and wanting something, perhaps to be healed, perhaps to be cured of something. But this particular story, Jesus sees something in this woman. And I would even dare to say that this story is actually a healing. Though she was not healed physically, healing happened. And I'm going to come back to that. So Jesus gets to the heart of the matter when he tells her who she really is. Now, at some point Jesus says, "You're right, you don't have one husband. You've had five husbands." Now, we read this story and I think we have put our own narrative on that, at least of the church. One might assume, and I've heard it preached, that perhaps this woman was of what we call loose morals. But I'm going to offer a different narrative. Imagine a woman having to live in a patriarchal society. Some of you, that may not be that hard to believe. But imagine where you were solely dependent on a man. And this woman has had five husbands. We don't know how she's had five husbands, whether she's been divorced, or what if she has been a widow five times? No matter what, there's a story behind there. She's either got an incredible amount of shame or an incredible amount of guilt. We don't really know. But she seems to know that Jesus knows. And the beautiful thing about this story, one of the beautiful things about this story, is that guilt or that shame does not derail their conversation. How many times in my own life have I been in conversations with people and gotten to an uncomfortable place and it's derailed the conversation? They're able to push past that and to go deeper. And I wonder, maybe the first time in her life, if not then, I suspect the first time in a very long time, someone sees her for her. Her true self. Maybe there's been people in your life who have seen you as you really are. Your grief, perhaps your shame, all that you are exposed. And Jesus, as much as some of our Christian brothers and sisters would have liked to, Jesus doesn't judge this woman. There is no go and sin no more. There is no shame or guilt. Instead, he offers her something different. Living water. If we choose to subscribe to the narratives that are given to us over and over and over again, then we will keep going to that well, folks. We will always be thirsty. Because these narratives, you see, are there to perpetuate the status quo, to keep things as they are. Jesus disrupts the status quo. We are told to be like Jesus. And you may be like me and think, be like Jesus? I can't walk on water. I can't turn water into wine, although that would be really nice. I can't heal people. But this is something that I can do. I can go out to places maybe where I'm not supposed to be. Maybe where it's a little bit uncomfortable. And I can meet people where they're at. I cannot judge people on their past, but see them for who they truly are. Which means, unlike Jesus, I don't have the information. I've got to ask questions and to get to know people and to not live into those false narratives that are given to me over and over and over again. So, we may not be able to heal people physically, but we do have a choice to be like Jesus today and perhaps heal society. Heal the rifts that these narratives create. See people for who they truly are. So, folks, your move. we have a choice. Which well are we going to drink from? The well that will always keep us thirsty over and over again? Or are we bold enough? Are we brave enough to truly drink the living water? Amen.